come to the quarry and feed the rock rats.
Don't know if they'll eat this kind of garbage, but at least it'll get them off the road.
Just then, the woman trembled and moaned.
Well, shit. The bitch is still alive.
Not anymore.
Watching the guards tumble the bodies into the pit, Ryan Cotter adjusted the focus on the antique brass telescope, careful not to disturb the bushes he was hiding within and give away his position. The telescope was an amazing little thing they had found in the ruins of the Virginia Beach Naval Station. Apparently, the base had been in the process of building a gateway when Skydark hit, and thus, the job was never finished. When the companions had jumped into the partially constructed Matt Trans chamber, every working circuit in the complex blew, and they barely managed to escape before the building burned to the ground. Afterward, they dutifully searched the ruins of the base, which included several smashed warships lying scattered about, hundreds of feet from the beach. A nuke had to have hit offshore and blown the crafts inland. All of the weapons and food were long gone from the base and the vessels, naturally, but Ryan had found this telescope. The unbreakable plastic lens was heavy, but the scope compacted smaller than binocs and was perfect for a one-eyed man. Fighting back a shiver, Ryan tried to ignore the cold that seemed to be seeping into his very bones. He was dressed in a fur-lined coat, but with only a thin flannel shirt, denim pants, and worn army boots. The comfortable clothing was perfect for the dry desert of Southern California, but useless against the damp chill of a Virginia autumn. The heavy metal of the Steyr SSG-70 rifle across his back and the blaster at his hip seemed to be leaching away what little heat his body generated. The weapons felt like lumps of ice pressed against his skin. Worse, the damn cold was making an old wound ache. Ryan gently rubbed the back of his hand against the leather patch where his left eye used to be. Sometimes in nightmares he could still see his brother's knife descending and feel the terrible starlight of pain that haunted him for so many years afterward.
What happened? I heard shots.
J.B. Dick squinted between the leaves of the bush at the ville below. Dressed in loose, neutral-colored clothing, army boots, and a brown leather motorcycle jacket, the wiry man blended in perfectly with the mottled browns and greens of the forest. An Uzi submachine gun hung off his left shoulder, a Smith & Wesson M4000 shotgun was slung across his back, and his backpack bulged with explosives. Their old boss, the trader, had nicknamed him the Armorer long ago, and the title fit John Barrymore Dix perfectly. There wasn't a weapon in existence the deadly man couldn't fire or repair with his eyes closed.
Guards chilled them both.
Dark night. The pregnant woman, too?
Nodding, Ryan passed over the telescope.
She was a fake, smuggling something in a belly pouch. Looked like Jolt.
Druggies, eh?
Taking the brass instrument, J.B. pushed his battered fedora to the back of his head so that he could slide his wire-rimmed glasses up on his forehead to use the long eye.
Hope the guards did them slow and painful. Jolt dealers trade on the misery of others and deserve whatever they get.
Shrugging his shoulders to adjust the rifle hanging across his back, Ryan agreed. Jolt was the curse of the New World. The drug was horribly addictive and promised a death slower than rat poisoning. The very thought reminded Ryan to check the miniature rad counter pinned to his collar, but the meter read clean, showing only a normal background count from the polluted orange sky. Any nukes used in this area had to have been clean bombs, the deadly radiation long dissipated.
So what do you think?
Ryan tugged on the fur collar of his coat. The wind was soft, but every gust cut through his clothing as if it were paper. They needed to get out of the cold mighty soon, before hypothermia cut them down. J.B. lowered the yard-long telescope and compacted it to the size of a soup can.
Looks good. Lots of families, no slave pens or cannibal roasting pits. I think we should do it.
Brushing the black curls off his scarred face, Ryan grunted his agreement.
This ville is our best chance. Let's go.
Rising, the two men moved stealthily into the woods. The ground was lightly frosted with twinkling ice, and every step they took crunched softly, betraying their movements. Following an old game trail, they soon came upon a small clearing hidden behind a thick copse of oak trees. A wide hole had been dug into the stony ground, with a small fire crackling in the middle of the shallow pit. Four people huddled close to the flames, the earthen walls containing and reflecting the meager heat so that even a small campfire would keep them warm through the bitter night. Ryan knew that the depression also helped to hide the light of the blaze from the armed sekmen of the ville below. An owl called softly, announcing their presence, just before J.B. shook the branches on a thorny bush, and Ryan whistled sharply twice. The people in the hole looked over the rim of the pit with their blasters drawn.
"Hey, Charlie!"
A red-headed woman called out, dressed in a shaggy black fur coat. The SNW 38 revolver in her hand wasn't pointed directly at them, but her slim finger rested on the trigger nonetheless.
"The name is Adam."
Ryan's answer gave the code name for all clear, and the others visibly relaxed. Entering the clearing, Ryan and JB noticed a small movement in the bushes nearby. It was the source of the owl call.
"Dean is getting better all the time. I can barely spot him anymore."
"The kid is good."
Cupping stiff hands around his mouth, Ryan gave the call of a lake bird, and within a few ticks his son appeared from the trees. There were leafy vines wrapped about his dark clothes and a slim black pistol in his hand.
"Nobody followed you, Dad."
Dean holstered the Browning high power. Ryan allowed himself a small smile.
"Good work. Take a break and get warm. We're going for the ville."
"Hot pipe!"
The boy hopped into the fire pit, landing dangerously close to the flames. He flopped down on a rock and shoved his face toward the warmth, breathing in the waves of heat like a fish gasping for air. Stepping into the pit a bit more carefully, J.B. went straight to the stocky black woman and gave her a kiss on the cheek.
"Hey, Millie. This ville looks okay. No sign of slave pens like the last two."
"Thank goodness. Any chance we can trade for horses or a wag?"
Dr. Mildred Wyeth sighed wearily as she whittled on a tree branch with a wicked-looking knife.
"That depends upon how willing they are to be reasonable."
J.B. removed his fedora and smoothed his sandy hair.
"But we'll get you some transport."
Ryan squatted on his heels.
"The ville seems to be a trading post. We saw a caravan of wags and horses being prepared. As long as we can pay, there'll be no trouble."
"War wags?"
Christy Roth's sentient hair was coiled tightly about her head in response to her tense mood.
"No, just trucks and some vans. Nothing special."
"Good."
"How's the foot?"
Ryan turned to Mildred, basking in the heat of the fire. Sheathing the blade, Mildred used the branch as a crutch to lever herself erect. Experimentally, she put some weight on her bandaged foot and hobbled a few steps, then sat on another flat rock with obvious relief.
"Better. Swelling is going down. Feel like an idiot spraining my ankle jumping from that ship we were searching."
"Thank Gaia it wasn't broken."
"Well, landing on top of John helped a lot."
Mildred smiled, straightening her leg carefully. Adjusting his glasses, J.B. grinned.
"Glad to be of assistance."
Ignoring the banter, Ryan watched her face, noting the pain she was trying to hide.
"Think you can make it to the ville?"
"To get out of this cold, I'd walk barefoot over live sting wings. Hell yes, I can make it. I'm ready to go right now."
Ryan rubbed his unshaven jaw.
"Sit down. We're going to wait for a bit before going. JB and I need to warm up some in case there's trouble. And we want to give the guards enough time to finish burying the dead."
"And divide the loot."
JB rested his Uzi on his lap. He paused for a moment, listening to the sounds of the forest, then slowly relaxed.
"We heard the shots. Who got chilled?"
Christy's long, fiery hair waved softly around her shoulders, as if stirred by secret winds only she could feel.
"A couple of outlanders trying to get inside the ville."
Ryan felt his muscles loosen under the waves of heat from the tiny fire. He rested a hand on the ground and discovered the surface was warm to the touch. This pit idea of Doc's worked great. Doc Tanner was a goldmine of clever ideas.
"Smugglers, we think. Man and a woman. She was dressed like she was pregnant, but it was only a bundle of white powder strapped to her belly."
J.B. used a handkerchief to polish his glasses.
"Shot her on the spot. Very fast on the draw, these guys. Not good marksmen, but bastard fast."
Pausing in his work of sharpening a leaf-shaped knife on a whetstone, Jack Lauren looked up.
Close enough. Speed all need.
Born and bred down in the nuke-blasted ruins of Norleans, the teenager was the color of snow, hair and skin alike. He wore military fatigues with bits of metal and glass sewn into his camo-colored vest.